تمتطي قوس قزح طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح من مخيم.
Welcome to the September 7th edition of This Week in Palestine, a weekly show hosted for many years by our beloved Sharif Pham and continued in his memory by a group of his dedicated friends. Every week, This Week in Palestine brings you news and views from a distinctly Palestinian perspective, a perspective seldom heard in the corporate media. On today's show, we feature two excerpts from the Dissenter originally broadcast on April 6, 2014. Hosts Kevin Gostola and Rania Kailak interview Professor Leiman Shekad of Columbia College Chicago and Tia Parel of Students for Justice and Peace Northeastern University about being targeted for their Palestinian activism on campus. Given the recent developments in the Steve Salacia case, it's important to see how pro-Israel forces have attempted to silence Palestinian voices and viewpoints in the past, and how dedicated activists continue to resist these well-coordinated acts of censorship. We hope you stay tuned for another thought-provoking edition of This Week in Palestine.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast. This is the episode for April 6, 2014. I'm your host, Kevin Gostola, and I'm joined by my co-host, Rania Kalek. Hello, Rania.
Hey, Kevin.
And we're doing a special episode for this week. We've decided to dedicate an entire topic. We're doing an entire topic here looking at Palestinian solidarity activism, particularly on campus. And we're giving attention to how campus administrators are clamping down on activism, how we've got other student groups that are going after students who engage in this activism. We're giving some attention to the climate that is growing, it seems, across the nation, as in fact, in some states, there have been anti-boycott resolutions that are brought against the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. I just quickly, Rania, you know, you want to introduce the people who we're going to be bringing on before we maybe give a few more comments before we proceed to the interviews?
Yeah, so we interviewed several people. The first one we're going to play for you is Ayman Shahad, he's a professor at Columbia College who teaches a class, a very popular class, on the Israel-Palestine conflict, and he screened the Oscar-nominated film, a documentary film, Five Broken Cameras, I think it was like last semester, and because of that, a student anonymously complained that he was being biased, and as a result, the college canceled one of his classes. And so, you know, and he talks, he goes into detail about the issues surrounding that, which have a very racial element to them. He's Palestinian, so Palestinian American. And then we also speak to two students at the University of Michigan, Suha Najjar and Farah Erzouki, who are co-chairs at the University of Michigan Students Allied for Equality, which is the basically like the Palestine solidarity group there. And they've been doing excellent work. They brought a divestment resolution to the student government a few weeks ago. And then they did a sit-in for a week because the student government wouldn't vote on the resolution. So they forced them to vote on the resolution. I watched the live stream of it. It was really incredible to watch. And these girls are just so smart and really young and doing really amazing work. And they've been really, them and their group, they've been very bullied by the pro-Israel groups and pro-Israel students. And we talk about that. And, you know, they've had these sort of baseless charges of anti-Semitism leveled against them. and some of the most ridiculous ones actually appearing in, you know, in neocon outlets like the Washington Free Beacon, which you'll hear about as well. So, and then after that, we talked to a student at Northeastern University. She is the president of the Students for Justice in Palestine chapter there, well, former president, because they have been banned. They've been suspended for leafletting because of, like, you know, complaints from pro-Israel students. And so that we talk about that as well. I mean, that's probably the most repressive environment or repressive tactics that have been used, taken place at Northeastern. So it's really important to hear about that. So, yeah, this is something that's happening all around the country. And it definitely goes beyond just Palestine activism on campus. I mean, this is something that is, you know, that could easily and will easily seep into other kinds of activism that are deemed too controversial. So, you know, it's really, this is a really, really important topic. These are significant developments, and we should all be paying attention.
Yeah, these are tactics that generally could be used to stamp out any sort of dissent on campus. So regardless of the issue that people are organizing around, we believe that this is something significant to give attention to. And I just want to say up at the front here, because I didn't raise it in the interview with Ayman, that I just want a full disclosure and say that I am a graduate of Columbia College Chicago. This is my alma mater. And I sort of felt like I had a responsibility to give coverage to this story, not because I am interested in these issues, but I also felt like, you know, if I was enrolled right now, I certainly would be speaking out. And this is an arts and communication college, which is sort of one of the things that when I wrote about this, I highlighted, because I found it really remarkable that what really set this off, the reason why Ayman's academic freedom was ultimately violated, centered around the screening of a film at a school that prides itself on trying to get students to, you know, quote unquote, author the culture of their times, end quote. And it would just seem that this would be something that the university would want to embrace. But I guess in the larger picture, as we're putting this into the context of the nation and what happens around being unable to discuss and have debates about Palestinians and Israelis and what's happening in Israel and the Palestinian territories, it just shows you the sort of how easy it is for even the most open, traditionally open climates to become repressive when these subjects become a part of the environment.
And to be clear, this type of repression is taking place because of the influence of pro-Israel groups. There is a massive campaign, a well-funded, well-coordinated effort by pro-Israel organizations, both on campus and off campus, to suppress this kind of activism, to label this kind of activism as bigoted, basically call it racist, to advocate for freedom of. For the freedom of Palestinians, for equality in Palestine, Israel. And I really encourage you to read about it in Alia Bunima's new book, The Battle for Justice in Palestine. If you're not familiar with it, it's an excellent book that, you know, it's a, Ali really goes into explaining sort of the interconnections and the intersections between what's happening in Palestine and other, you know, forms of racial oppression around the world, really, but mostly in America. But he also has a chapter in his book called The War on Campus that really, like, that gives a comprehensive overview of what's taking place, the people that are behind it, and how they're using like legal mechanisms, civil rights laws even, to try and stifle activism on campus. I mean, it's really gross and disgusting and something that should concern all of us, because it's like, I mean, when you think about it, it's essentially people who are, you know, ideologically invested in a settler colonialist state, using their resources to suppress the activism predominantly being done by people of color, advocating for freedom and equality. So it's a very, very important topic. And, I really hope that, you know, everybody listening gets gets a better understanding of what's happening from these interviews.
Yeah, we'll get to the interviews quickly, but just a quick note before we proceed. In fact, in Illinois, right, this week, they tried to pass an academic boycott resolution that would have basically prohibited students on campuses from engaging in boycotts. Just generally, boycotts would have been mostly banned because it would have been wrong to, you know, boycott one country when there were other countries that were violating human rights. So to prevent people from engaging in activism around Palestinian issues, they were just going to say, all right, end to this kind of speech. And it failed, which is a good thing. But just to point out how they are using the actual legal mechanisms, this is a very real thing. Anything final you want to say, Ronnie, before we dive in?
I do. I just want to give a shout out and point out that you should also read this really excellent piece that Max Blumenthal wrote at Mondo Weiss about specifically about what happened at the University of Michigan. He was there during the divestment vote. It's called A Painful Price, The Escalating War on Palestine Solidarity at U of Michigan and Beyond. And it's a really great piece and just kind of gives a sense of, like, from this one campus, like, what is taking place, the kind of bullying and intimidation efforts and racist effort, like racist bullying that's taking place by pro-Israel students and, you know, pro-Israel ideologues. So I really encourage you to read it, and I'll link to it in the, you know, in the post I put up about the episode.
All right. Thanks, everybody. If you have any recommendations for future topics that we should get into and dedicate special episode to that topic, feel free to tweet at us at the unauthorized dis Twitter account, which is UNAUTHORIZEDDIS. That's the handle. We'd be happy to consider that because we feel like doing more of these in the future. So thank you and enjoy the episode. Hello, Ayman. Thank you for joining us. The first question I have for you is if you could just describe what happened on campus, this complaint, for people who are unfamiliar with how this started, the problem that you had. Can you talk about that?
Well, sure. So I teach a class called the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, which I designed and put together in 2010. I originally started off with one section as a pilot course. Later on, the class began to be very popular. We went up to three sections at one point. And so the class has been popular. It has been a class that students always want to register for. But as you know, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict discussion is not without any passion or controversy and so forth. And so there's been allegations of bias or what have you in the past about some of the language and some of the material that I bring into the class, such as discussing the occupation. My assignments have been criticized before. For example, we have an assignment where at the end of the semester for a final, students have to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And so that is within the realm of a one-state or a two-state solution. I've had students complain about that because some people believe that this land is exclusive to a particular group of people. So the last few years have been great in teaching the class, but as I said again, it has not been without any controversy. The most recent issue was in October of 2013, where I showed the Academy Award-nominated film Five Broken Cameras, which is an excellent film about the occupation of Palestine. And so it achieves one of the core objectives of my class, which is to give students an understanding from a human perspective. We discuss politics and theory and so forth, but once the students actually see the actual occupation, it really is beneficial to the overall enrichness of the class. And so because it gives them a frame of reference to the occupation. In October, I showed the film, and I had a student complain that the class was biased, according to the administration. I never met the student to speak to them. I never was given an opportunity to talk to the student about this allegation. So they contacted the administration. They said that the I was biased for showing the film. Then I was I received an email from the chair of the Department of Humanities, History, and Social Sciences. It's a department that I teach for, to come down and talk about an issue which was never identified. So I went to the chair and we spoke. Now, on that same day, I had received my assignment for the following semester, which would be this semester, for two sections of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict course. At the meeting, I was told by the chair that the student had said that I was biased for showing the film. The chair, Stephen Corey, counseled me on the on balance as far as the presentation of information is concerned. And when I asked why the student hadn't come to me, or why they didn't ask the student to come to me, the response was that when he was in college, he had been intimidated by an African-American professor that apparently had a did not like the white students in the classroom. And so he also asked for my qualifications. Now, keep in mind, I've been teaching at Columbia College for over 6 years. It'll be 7 years in August. And so with that, I left the meeting, and a few days later, one of my sections for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict course was eliminated. Now, mind you, I had already received the contract. The class had already gone on registration for students to register to. It's a platform called OASIS, and within 2 hours, the class was pulled. Mm. Now, I filed a grievance with a union that I'm a part of, and we had an opportunity to meet with Columbia College and grieve the situation. The first grievance was rejected, and the second grievance, which was a few weeks ago, I met with the interim provost. Her name is Louise Love, and she also would eventually reject the grievance. Now, Louise Love was a she was an associate provost a few years ago at Roosevelt University when a professor, Giles, was fired because he gave students the opportunity to talk about Zionism and criticize Zionism and look at the Palestinian perspective. He was fired for that by his chair. Her name was Susan Weninger, who was upset that this professor had given students a platform and an opportunity. In fact, she went as far as to call Palestinians animals. She said that they don't have a side. It was Louise Love that was the associate provost there at the time who supported her, supported the firing, and said that she was simply defending her position passionately. And so there's a history of anti-Palestinian bias at Columbia College at the top. And so what we did was the AAUP, the American Association of University Professors, came in, conducted an independent investigation, and they found that Columbia College had violated my academic freedom. And so that was recently published, and in addition to that, we've had thousands of supporters around the world with our petition, petition that asked for the reinstatement of the class, and it also asked for Columbia College to respect academic freedom when it is relating to the issue of Palestine, which has been a problem not only at Columbia College, but other places around the country. In addition to that, we also received a letter from Guy Davidi, who is one of the two directors of Five Broken Cameras, in support of this campaign, in support of academic freedom, and in support of discussion about Palestine at Columbia College or any other place in the United States.
So this really strikes me as interesting as how similar that sounds to I don't know if you're familiar with this story, but it was a few months ago. There was a female black professor at Minneapolis Community and Technical College that was actually reprimanded because of two white students who complained that her structural racism class was biased. But I just wanted to throw out that observation because what you just said really, really struck me as similar to that. But also, I'm curious about, you mentioned one of the people that was involved in sort of leading this attack against you, I guess. What about organizations? I mean, was the Hillel, the College Hillel involved at all?
Well, I at this point, as far as the allegation of bias is concerned, for this last one, I don't know who this student is, and I don't want to know. I don't think that it's important to identify the student, at least in public. But what I can tell you is that there has been a history of attack on me at Columbia College from Hillel in the past. Mm. And an example of that would be a couple of years ago, I had three sections of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict course. And before I knew it, there were eight students from three different sections of the class who had put together a petition that claimed I was biased. Hmm. And I was puzzled to try to figure out how these students from three different sections, and eight of them, were able to find each other and sign this petition and put it together. There has been issue with Hillel in the past at Columbia College. With regards to that petition, students that supported me, they numbered, I think that the petition, I don't know the exact number, but it was over 50 students, signed a counter petition expressing their support for my class. And so I've had issues with Hillel before. Another example would be last year we premiered Five Broken Cameras to the public at Columbia College. And I was I spoke at that event along with Lynn Pollack, who is from Jewish Voice for Peace. People at the college were demanding that a pro-Israel perspective be allowed to speak after Five Broken Cameras, which I immediately rejected. Mm-hmm. And so there has been a push on the campus to try to stifle and try to muzzle and try to create, at the very minimum, this idea of what has been called balance, which is a word, by the way, that has been thrown around a lot. And it's a word that can be misleading because on the surface it sounds pretty. Balance as a word sounds pretty, but the reality of it is you cannot balance the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, especially when you're dealing with a nation state that has all the power that is derivative of a state, occupying millions of people who do not have civil rights. It's like presenting the civil rights movement and those who are against rights for human beings as balanced. It's like giving them a forum to counter why African Americans, for example, shouldn't have rights and dignity and freedom and so forth. And so this idea of balance was not asked of me for the first time when I met with this chair. It's been asked of me in the past. It's been asked of other professors around the country as well.
And I'm also curious about, you mentioned earlier that you were counseled about what balance means or how to balance. And I'm curious if you were offered any examples about what balance to Five Broken Cameras would mean.
Well, it's a really good question. I wasn't given specifics as how one would balance a settler colonial state versus an occupied people without any civil rights. Mm. So historically, the idea has been to present the information as sort of two sides that are fighting over land, and things are really bad, and if they can only get along. This is how it's been presented.
Right.
The reality of it, however, is that it's not that way. In fact, it's very misleading to present it that way because it would be a lie. The reality of the situation is that you're dealing with a state that is occupying another group of people. And so what does occupation mean? And what does that mean for the Palestinian population? It's not a balanced issue.
Right.
You're dealing with a state that seeks exclusivity, Jewish exclusivity, on a territory where historically, prior to the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians in 1948, the country was never exclusively Jewish, and so. The Palestinian perspective has been muzzled, and it is beginning and has been beginning to seep into mainstream society in terms of this is actually what happened. This is what's going on with the conflict today. And a lot of people don't like that. And you can see the ramifications of that. You see it at Columbia College. You see it in Boston with the SJP over there. You're seeing it with Barnard. And there are other examples of professors, the one that I just gave you a little while ago, where the attempt to muzzle has been tried, but it is failing.
And also, I'm curious, what is your background?
I am Palestinian.
And I assume so, or at least some sort of, you know, Middle Eastern background. And so I'm curious if that's played a role at all in the attacks on you is, he can't be, you know, he can't be balanced because look at his background. There's, you know, it's not possible.
Well, I've read, you know, I've seen some responses from students in the past that have said something similar to that. Well, how could he be saying the reality of the situation? After all, he is Palestinian, and some people do feel that way. And that's due with the information being presented in the class, which has been counter to the reality of the presentation of the issue of Palestine and Israel in mainstream American media. And so there are a lot of students, and the majority of them realize this, and they say, wow, we have an opportunity to really learn the reality of this issue. Mm-hmm. While some other people will say that he's not teaching the truth or the reality simply because he's Palestinian. So I've heard that before.
Mm. That's interesting.
Now, a couple questions I have before we end the interview is just to make sure that everyone who's listening understands that the Illinois chapter of the American Association of University Professors did find that your academic freedom had, in fact, been violated. But what you're telling us today is that the college administration has not made any of the moves that were recommended by this chapter?
Well, they did make one move, which was they reinstated the second section. So what I've seen, and I saw this yesterday, is that the college decided to reinstate one of the sections. So for the fall, so far, what I see is two sections of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict course, and I will be teaching them. So that's wonderful. It's a good start. In addition to that, there has to be an assurance that this type of attempt at muzzling, that this type of discrimination does not happen in the future at Columbia College. And so thus far, however, we haven't seen anything concrete that the college has come out and stated in reference to that. They have not only rejected my stance that this was an academic freedom violation, they've rejected the AUP stance as well that this was an academic freedom violation. And so they have not come out and stated that this is a problem that we're going to look into and we're going to try to rectify. We have not seen that response from Columbia College, and it's important that they come out and try to create the mechanisms, both in word and in terms of some tangible approaches to try to rectify the situation of this history of anti-Palestinian bias at Columbia College.
And I also want to ask you one more question about the ramifications of these attacks on academic freedom are not isolated to Palestine activism or Palestine, even just not even Palestine activism, in your case, really just teaching the reality on the ground. That this has consequences on academic freedom for everyone, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're absolutely right about that. And so can you, you know, you bring up an excellent point, because can you imagine an African-American professor teaching about the struggle for civil rights for African-Americans in the 1960s, and then having administration, which has a particular agenda, demand that the African-American professor also give the side of white supremacists in the United States during that period, or people from the queer community advocating for equal rights as far as marriage is concerned, and then having someone in administration demand and say, well, you have to give the perspective of those who want to deny you those rights. These things, when you put them into that context, are ludicrous. They're absurd. And so this is a clear violation of the ability of a professor who has the background, who has the skills to deliver information that is important and it needs to be heard without the threat of muzzling. And so when you apply it to a much broader and a much larger context, it is very problematic.
And I do want to actually ask one more thing about, to end on a bit of a more positive note. This does seem to be this sort of ramping up of this attack on free speech on campuses across the country, really, when it comes to Palestine solidarity. It does seem to be a reaction to a growing and effective and increasingly successful movement to put out the Palestinian narrative to the broader public, and a growing movement really against Israeli racism and discrimination. I mean, it does seem to be saying that they're scared.
Well, absolutely. I think it's a fighting retreat is what I call it. It doesn't work. When people found out about what happened at Columbia College, people came out in the thousands to support me and to support academic freedom. People from all over the world, people have mobilized here. They're also mobilizing in Boston to ensure that the SJP over there is reinstated, and at Barnard and in other places. And so it is a testament to not only the reality and the truth on the ground in Palestine, but it is a testament to the will and to the skills of people here in the United States and across the world who are saying, this, that's enough. You cannot keep the reality of this terrible issue, the suffering, continuous suffering of Palestinians for decades now, because there are individuals who want to muzzle that. And so it is a very positive occurrence that we got the class reinstated, and it's excellent that the SJP in Boston is being supported and that Barnard is also being supported. And so this is going to continue. It is not going to stop. Whenever people around the country feel that there are those who will embrace this idea that Palestine is indeed the exception to the rule of academic freedom, there are going to be tens of thousands of people who are.
So Kevin and I are here with Tori Perel she is the president in exile of a Northeastern Students for Justice in Palestine chapter. And so if you're not familiar with that story, the SJP at Northeastern was recently suspended. So Tori, why don't you tell us what happened?
Sure. So on March 7th, we received a letter from the administration saying that SJP had been suspended. We could no longer access any university resources, book rooms. And this was effective through the end of the year. And then they would think about potentially reinstating us in the future with none of the same members who are in the group now. And this is a result of an action we did about a week before when we distributed mock eviction notices. In student dorms, they said eviction notice at the top and then went on to give statistics about Israeli home demolitions in the occupied West Bank. And this is to basically show people the, you know, the fear that comes with being a Palestinian, of, you know, getting a letter saying you're going to be evicted and your home demolished in a couple days.
Right. It's a little exercise in giving people a small, tiny taste of what it might be like to come home one day and find your entire residence and existence criminalized and arbitrarily.
Right. Okay. And to be clear, on the eviction notices, it's not like it's made clear on them that this is not real.
Yeah, the biggest text on the flyer was, this is not a real eviction notice.
And these were basically leafletting. Mm-hmm. And this was, the university said that this was like illegal or called the police or something. There was like insanity that took place. So yeah, tell us what happened after that.
Right. So 2 days after we did this leafletting, those of us who were involved started getting phone calls on our private cell phones from the Northeastern Police. Several students were pulled in for interrogations, and the police showed up at some people's homes unannounced. And they just had all kinds of questions about SJP, mostly as an organization, not even necessarily regarding the flyers. The students who were interviewed first, and actually the only students who were interviewed, have very obviously sounding Arab or Muslim names, whereas students without Arab or Muslim names were not interviewed, even though some of us are on record with the university as being leaders in the group. And then all kinds of charges were leveled against the organization in the suspension notice. The only thing they charged us with relating to the flyers was distributing an unauthorized flyer. But they also threw a bunch of other charges in there that they'd never previously raised with us, all the way up to, vandalism from 2012.
Vandalism? What was that for?
In 2012, some stickers appeared around campus with pro-Palestinian messages on different locations. One that was particularly controversial was, someone placed a sticker that said, "Zionism is racism," on a statue of a man who has donated a lot of money to the university, Robert Shulman, who is also on the board of the Zionist Organization of America. So the major campus controversy, but the university doesn't know who did it and is simply accusing SJP based on the fact that we are also pro-Palestinian.
And stickers are vandalism as well. So obviously.
Apparently.
Obviously. Yeah. That's crazy. So now you guys are suspended. And one thing that I thought was really interesting was the charge leveled against you guys for the leafletting part, or the flyers, unauthorized flyers. It's something that doesn't get a rule that gets enforced ever. Right?
No. Yeah. Any student who's lived in a dorm at our university will tell you, you get flyers under your door every single day from sports teams, from theater groups, from restaurants, from other things. And it's never taken seriously. So this rule may be on the books, but obviously when the rugby team does this, they don't get the cops at their door the next morning.
And I guess that goes to the people involved in, the people who were angriest about this, who made the most noise about this, which would be, correct me if I'm wrong, but the school's Hillel organization and other mm-hmm. pro-Israel organizations. Can you talk a little bit about their influence with this?
Hillel at Northeastern released a statement shortly after the notices went up, very dramatically stating the students were terrified and really thought they were being evicted, and this was causing widespread intimidation, and we have no doubt that they're the ones who complained to the university and triggered all of this. It's especially evident because when the university sent out messages to the students who lived in the dorms, they said that if any students had been affected by this, that they could contact Hillel for support, not any kind of organization that's actually affiliated with the university, like Counseling Services, but Hillel. And also the pro-Zionist group, Huskies for Israel, has come out and applauded our suspension since it was handed down.
And what has the atmosphere been like since then with you guys are still doing stuff. I know, and you're suspended. Mm-hmm. You can't, rent rooms, I guess. But, are you guys are still doing actions or meeting up and stuff? Has there been further suppression efforts?
So we've actually had a tremendous outpouring of support from other student groups since we've been suspended, primarily the Progressive Student Alliance, but other groups, the the Climate Divestment Group on campus, the Latino Student Association, everywhere to the debate club and the chess team have really rallied around this and said that they will help us with anything we need related to the university. So, for example, this week we hosted Palestinian author Ali Abu Nima. The group space was booked through another student organization, and it was officially hosted by them, but it really was an event on our behalf. And on that same night, we also hosted a large demonstration to protest the 6 Israeli Knesset members that the university was hosting in a town hall meeting in the university's largest auditorium that night.
That's interesting. Knesset members who, you know, Palestinians on campus have a legitimate reason to probably fear
yeah,
can come to campus, right? But SJP can't. That's really great, though. That's really great that there's been so much rallying around you guys. And I'm curious also, like, if you've gotten support from other universities, like, or students on other university campuses, because, I mean, this is sort of a nationwide thing right now with these kinds of suppression efforts. I mean, it's probably most extreme at your school, but it's happening, it seems, everywhere.
Absolutely. We've had a tremendous amount of support from the other SJPs here in Boston. They've done everything they can to come out to our events and support us and while we've been organizing against this, particularly Harvard, because they kind of went through similar things last year when they did the same mock eviction notice action. Of course, they weren't suspended, but they also faced some kind of discipline. But we've also gotten messages of support and direct support from SJPs across the country, such as Barnard, who faced discipline right around the exact same time we were suspended, as well as students in Florida, who we were already in solidarity with because we both were disciplined last spring for similar walkouts of events with IDF soldiers. So there really is a nationwide pattern, and there's also a pattern of solidarity.
And are you, are you noticing, what year are you?
I'm a fifth year.
Okay, so you're not going to be there much longer.
Nope.
I assume there's, like, younger people that are involved in this kind of activism. I mean, do you feel like this is, you know, kind of pushing people away from being involved in Palestine solidarity activism, or not really?
I think the biggest fear that students have always had about getting involved with Palestinian activism on campus is that they would face some kind of sanctions at the university, that it would endanger their status. And in addition to the suspension of SJP, the university targeted 2 of our youngest members for individual disciplinary sanctions, which was a clear message of intimidation to students who may want to be involved in SJP. However, due to our strategic organizing, even though these students were once threatened with expulsion for these activities, their eventual punishment was to write 500-word essays about the importance of housing policy.
Oh, my gosh, are you serious? I did not know.
Yeah. So the university intimidation efforts really aren't working, and we've shown that the students who are in SJP are our family, and that we're not going to let anything happen to them, and that the university attempting to single them out and intimidate them is just not acceptable.
And will you guys be reinstated soon? Like, how's that going to work out?
Hopefully. Our campaign has gone extremely well. This issue has resonated nationwide, and there's been an intense amount of pressure on the university. We're still waiting on the results of our administrative appeal of our suspension. So if the university wants to do the right thing and really is feeling the pressure that we've put on, hopefully we will be reinstated very soon. And if not, we will have to kind of explore our options for what to do next.
That's all really exciting. As much as, you know, this all sucks, it's also really exciting that inspiring that so many people have your back, which is great.
Right. Yeah, we would have never reached this many people with our message if we hadn't been facing sanctions. So it really kind of was a gift in that respect.
Yes, that's ironic that it worked out that way. Do you have anything you want to ask, Kevin?
No, I think you covered it all with her, so I'm glad that you were able to join us. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're awesome, Tori. Keep up the great work.
And this concludes another edition of This Week in Palestine, a weekly segment here on WZBC Newton 90.3 FM. And it's part of Truth and Justice Radio, heard every Sunday morning from 6 to 10 a.m. We hope that you'll join us again for news and views from and about Palestine.